Plans for the Titletown District adjacent to Lambeau Field have been revealed. Is it the Packers' heaven, or is it too corporate for your own liking? We'll ask today's guest on today's show, Ryan Glasspiegel of The Big Lead. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Welcome to Railbird Central at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We're getting ready for an upcoming game against the Pittsburgh Steelers on Sunday, but we've got lots of other stuff to talk about, and we've got a guest joining us on the phone to do so.
Expert interview.
We've got Ryan Glasspiegel of USA Today's The Big Lead. Mr. Glasspiegel, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Very good. We're glad you could join us on the show. And to kick things off, I want our listeners to get to know you a little bit. You cover sports from a national perspective at USA Today's The Big Lead, but I gather you're a Green Bay Packers fan at heart. How did it all start for you?
Yeah, so I had a job where about 4 or 5 years ago where I was working for an online furniture website. I graduated from Wisconsin, and I did that for about a year and a half. And I liked the job decently, but it just wasn't what I wanted to do with my life. So I quit it, and I started a sports blog called SportsReport.com. And I blogged pretty much daily on there for about 2 years. And I did features in other places. Like I wrote a long form piece on medical marijuana industry in Colorado for Huffington Post. I wrote a piece on the growth of Scani Nation for the website On Milwaukee. I wrote a piece on what you'd expect to get back on your investment in a $2 Powerball ticket for a site called The All. And eventually, the short story of it is I had worked with an editor at ESPN, the magazine, for something really quickly back when I still had the furniture job. But then they moved their offices from New York to Bristol. And that editor was like, I'm not moving to Bristol. I'm 28 years old. I'm in New York. I'm not moving to rural Connecticut. Yeah. So he was gone from there, and I lost touch with him for probably like 2 or 3 years. And eventually, my dad noticed his byline at SI.com. And so he's like, contact him. I'm like, I don't know. I wasn't really sure about it. I filed it away on my maybe to-do list and followed him on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I was an associate editor for a Chicago sports website called ChicagoSideSports.com. And I'd only been there for like 2 or 3 weeks. And I wasn't getting paid very much, but it was like something that I was doing. And it felt like I was still on an upward trajectory. So anyways, I got fired from there just because it really wasn't a good temperamental fit. And I was like, this sucks. I'm going to quit. I'm going to go do something else. I've been doing this for 4 years and I've gotten nowhere. And literally at 3 hours after I was fired, I had an email from this editor at SI.com being like, hey, I saw you followed me on Twitter. I went through and read a bunch of your stuff. It's pretty good. Let's figure out a way to work together. So cool. I was at SI.com for about 8 or 10 months, and that was a part-time job. So I was working mornings there and then trying to do freelance stuff in the afternoon. And eventually I emailed my now boss, Jason McIntyre, like, hey, I'm doing this. This is what I've done. I'd like to get a full-time job in sports blogging. I've obviously read your site for a long time. Is there any way I could get an audition or something? And he replied within an hour, Ryan, I'm familiar with your work. Let's get you on a weekend shift to see if it's a good fit. And let's then I'll try to get USA Today to work out the budget. Mm-hmm. And so I did that for 2 months while I was still at SI. And eventually he did get USA Today to open up the budget. So now I've been there full time since last January.
Well, it's amazing how things work out sometimes. You know, you're fired and 3 hours later you set the wheels in motion for a new job. I love it. I love it. Ryan, though, let's talk a little bit about the biggest news of the day in Green Bay. I want to get your reaction to the newly revealed Titletown District in Green Bay. What do you like? What don't you like? What's your opinion on this rather large undertaking?
So I wrote about this a little bit back when the plans were still a little bit nebulous.
Okay.
And I wrote about it when I went to the Brett Favre ceremony at Lambeau about a month ago. And I compared what the Packers are doing to Cartman's Trapper Keeper. I don't know if you ever seen that episode of South Park where, like, his Trapper Keeper, it's like a Dawson's Creek state-of-the-art smart Trapper Keeper, and it just keeps absorbing everything in its path. And I feel like that's what the Packers are doing with everything around Lambeau Field. And part of it is good because I think that they're laying the foundation to, like, they're really setting up roots and they're making it so that franchise is going to be self-sustaining and it's going to be able to basically have a license to print its own money. And I think that Green Bay has been headed in sort of a gentrification direction that's being spurred on by the Packers for the past 20 years. If you drive down Oneida for 2 miles, you're just going to see all chain restaurants and stores that weren't there before the mid-90s or even 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that really hasn't been the case for other cities in Wisconsin other than like Madison and Milwaukee. But Green Bay, for a town of its size, not being directly near any other big city, I think it's really unique for something that's happening in that state, and it's directly attributable to the Packers. Now, I hope that in doing this, they don't bulldoze everything that makes Green Bay have a small town charm and makes it really unique in the NFL landscape. I hope that they're sensible enough to leave some of the businesses around it alone and let them continue to operate in a way that feels more distinctly Wisconsin than putting in like massive luxury hotels. I think that they'll do it well, but I'll reserve judgment until I see its completion. How do you feel about it?
I think it's just, it is what it is. I mean, it's the future, and in that area of the city, I don't think there's any, you know, small town feel. You know, they got rid of a Kmart, of a Big Lots, of those kind of things. So, you know, I would, you know, certainly, you know, balk at if they were ever to touch that bar area kind of over on the other side of Lambeau Field, the stadium view, and Doozy's, the bar, the Green Bay Distillery, those kind of things. I think they should leave those alone, and I think they will. I think it's a good thing otherwise. But I do think you should just write an article with the, you know, Titletown District, Cartman's Trapper Keeper. I think that should, you know, draw everybody in.
I don't know. I did. I mean, I put it in an article, so I don't know if I want to use it again. Maybe.
Gotcha.
Though.
Gotcha. All right. This current Packers team, we've only gotten a brief look in the first preseason game about how the Packers are replacing Mike McCarthy as the play caller. What do you think about that move, and how do you think Tom Clements will do in that role?
Well, I mean, it's too early to forecast exactly how it goes. I think that one of the major implications of the move is that Aaron Rodgers is going to have a lot more individual power. I think over the last few years, it's not like Aaron Rodgers ever came out and said, I'm explicitly disappointed by Mike McCarthy's play calling and he should give me the keys. I've earned them. But I think that, like, around the edges, if you're like you and me and you read everything, you could see some tea leaves that they were starting to get a little bit fatigued with each other, and maybe Clements is like a set of like fresh eyes will give Rodgers some like new energy. Not that he was bad or anything, or that I even think it affected the game, but I think maybe a happier Rodgers is a good thing. We'll see. We're gonna have to see how McCarthy handles broader big game decisions like challenges or the decisions of whether to go for it or kick a field goal or whatever. Some of the things that, if you look back on it with the benefit of hindsight, cost them in the Seattle game. I think we've got to see those things improve from a broader perspective to in order to say that the move was a good thing, because I liked our play calling generally, or the Packers play calling generally. So it'll be interesting to see how it transitions once the real games start. I will say this though, I was mortified that they kept Aaron Rodgers in as long as they did in their first preseason game. And when he took that blindside sack in a drive that I didn't think he should have been on, I think every Packers fan collectively gasped.
Well, let's transition right into that, because that's of course one of the, Mike McCarthy might not be calling plays, but this is one of the big decisions he did make, playing Aaron Rodgers and the rest of the starters basically 33 snaps in the first preseason game. I've gone on this in our last broadcast. I feel the same way. I feel the first preseason game, this shouldn't be happening, and it's done in the name of getting off to a fast start to the season. So, I guess my question is that do the Packers indeed need to get off to a fast start, and will the starters playing more in the preseason accomplish that?
Well, I mean, there's two ways to look at it. First of all, if the Packers had won one more game last year, like let's say Jordy Nelson doesn't drop that 90-yard touchdown against the Bills that he catches 99 out of 100 times, like if the Packers win that game, then they're home in the NFC Championship game versus Seattle. And that game was decided on like a 51-49 basis. So you would like just intrinsically think, oh, if we were home, we would have won. So I could see why they want to do it from that perspective. But in the playoffs recently, I mean, Green Bay hasn't had such a dramatic home field advantage in the last even 15 years, as you would think about it, going back to when Mike Vick ran around in the cold and somehow won in Lambeau. I don't remember, maybe like 2003. I don't remember the exact year, but going back to then, it seems like the Packers haven't had as discernible a home field advantage during the playoffs at Lambeau. And obviously, the year that they won the Super Bowl, they went and won all their games in the path on the road. So, yeah, you'd like to get off to a faster start just because it's been frustrating for the last 3 or 4 years to start off 1-2 and have to deal with all of the anxiety that comes along with it. But I'm not sure the idea that home field advantage throughout the playoffs is a magical elixir, you know?
And I'm skeptical there's any correlation between playing a lot in the first preseason game is going, going to accomplish that the goal of getting off to a faster start. But
Yeah,
anyway.
especially with the offense, which is really like the core pieces of the offense have been together for 4 or 5 years now. And I think that like they're the last thing that I'm worried about with this team. So I don't know. I don't, I just, I want to get through the preseason with as little attrition to our starters as possible. I don't care if we go out and lose the next 3 games, 210-3.
Yeah,
I
exactly.
just, please, please, please make sure that everybody's healthy for the games that matter.
Yeah, and the first game is one of the rare opportunities for, you know, Matt Blanchard and Brett Hundley to play. Let him play, I think. But anyway, okay. Speaking of Aaron Rodgers and the starters here, how long do you think Aaron Rodgers' window as a top flight quarterback? How long is that window open? And I suppose you could also take that as how long do you think the Packers' window at his Super Bowl is open?
Yeah, that they are really one and the same. Although, I mean, yeah, they are. We got really lucky replacing Favre with Rodgers, and I don't know that we can count on something like that again. Rodgers turns 32 during this season, and yeah, he sat 3 years before Favre, so it seems like he has a little less miles on his odometer than a traditional like top flight 31, 32-year-old quarterback. We've seen Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, and I guess like to a lesser extent, Drew Brees, like continue to excel while they're getting into their later 30s. But Rodgers has been banged up the last two seasons. Last year, he didn't miss any time, but he was really hobbled by that calf injury for really starting in that loss at New Orleans. That was when he started to be affected by a leg injury. And then the year before that, obviously, he had that collarbone injury. So his durability is not without question going forward. And I'd worry about him staying healthy a lot more than skills declining in the next 3 or 4 years. He said he wants to play another 8 years to Peter King, and I'd sign up for that in a second. But I'm worried that about his ability to stay healthy. Do you think that's a founded concern?
I think generally he'll stay healthy. I mean, you can never predict these sort of things, like, you know, what happened last year with his calf injury, or, you know, an injury that kept Peyton Manning out for a full year. I mean, these things are just, you know, impossible to predict. But, you know, as long as he's healthy, I mean, just look at Peyton Manning right now. He's 41 years old, and he's still a capable quarterback, if nothing else, at this point. So he is,
but he can't stay durable for a whole season.
True.
And last year and the year before, his arm strength really diminished going late in the year. So, and Brady's a good example. At the beginning of the year last year, Brady looked like he might be done. But then he got better going later into the year, which was sort of strange. And I don't know. I hope that Rodgers is able, that his durability stands up. That's basically, if Rodgers is healthy and with the current set of NFL rules that are more designed to protect quarterbacks, then I don't see any reason he can't be a top 2 or 3 or 4 quarterback in the league for the next 5 years. But the Packers window, they really... this is really dumb that we're talking about Rodgers' legacy when he still has maybe 5-8 years to play.
Yep.
But at the top, when you're ranking the best quarterbacks of all time, there's a lot of ones that are really, really good. And so once you get into the top 5 or 10, it's dumb to judge quarterbacks just on win-loss record, but Super Bowl championships is a major tiebreaker. And I think if Favre had a second one, then he'd be considered a lot better standing up against people like Joe Montana or Johnny Unitas and things like that of that nature than he is with just one. So I think like if Favre had 2 Super Bowl rings, he'd be considered like a top 3 or 4 quarterback of all time. Mm-hmm. And now, oh no, he's just merely top 10.
Yeah.
But just thinking about Rodgers on that level, he's got to win one more to crack into that elite stratosphere.
I agree. How you doing on time, Ryan? I got some questions for
good. I can stay as long as you want.
Fantastic. All right, let's talk about the defensive side of the football here. Julius Peppers is 35 years old this season. Do you think he'll be placed on a snap count?
Yeah, there was an article in the Journal Sentinel. I think it was by Tom Silverstein, but it might have been by somebody else. It might have been by Michael Cohen. But they said that like that's a concerted issue that they're focusing on. I don't remember the exact. I don't know if they named an exact number, but I think they're going to be really cognizant of the need to keep him fresh for the long haul. And as we saw last, I think they did that to some extent last year. They weren't really explicit about it, but I don't think he was in there for a majority of the defensive snaps. You probably know that better than I do, but they did a really good job of when Jim Ross talks about WWE and like people on Raw, he always says that the wrestlers need to maximize their minutes on television. And I think that that's what the Packers are doing with Clay Matt with yeah they're going to do it with Clay Matthews as well. And Julian, the Packers are going to try to maximize the minutes of Julius Peppers and Clay Matthews, who the latter of whom has had some durability issues of his own over the year. And there's really you can't a football as you said a football player can get injured on any given play. They play a profoundly violent sport, so yeah, like even if they do limit the snap count for Julius Peppers or Clay Matthews, there's a chance that they take a cut and there's a non-contact leg injury, or someone like puts a helmet into their knee or their wrist or something like that. And that can happen on any play to any player. But I do think that they're going to mitigate the risk with some of those players so that with a design of ideally having them healthy and fresh for the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm not sure it happens with Clay Matthews at this point, other than a rare snap off. I don't know. He's just so young yet, and I realize he's had injury issues in the past, and he's dealing with a knee and an elbow now. But I don't know. Shouldn't he be young enough to be out there basically 98% of the plays, you think?
He should be, but like if you look at it, like he wasn't in down the stretch in that Seahawks game, and that's really you can really draw a line about when it was going good and when it was going terrible to when Matthews came out of that game.
Yeah.
So I mean, yeah, you would
But it was in response to an injury, though. I mean, he got hit several times and he had to come out.
No, I understand that. I just. I don't know. Yeah, he's really valuable, and he's just about he's not as important to the defense as Aaron Rodgers is to the offense, but he is clearly the most important piece on there. And if you look just over a 5-year time period, how much better they are with him in versus when he's not, I don't know. In my opinion, I'd love to keep I the This is like dangerous, but it doesn't seem like there's. What would you say the odds are that the Packers win the NFC North? 75%?
I'd put it better than that, even probably, but sure.
So you're operating from a perspective that according to you, there's a better than 3-4 chance that they'll be in the playoffs and have a home game. So if you're operating from that presumption, then I just think that with Peppers and Matthews, you want to have them as fresh as possible at this point. I think you and I might have to agree to disagree on whether they might limit Matthews this year.
Fair enough, fair enough. Before you go here, Ryan, I'd ask you for a prediction for Sunday's game, but that's pretty much meaningless. So maybe I'll ask for a season prediction instead. Can you give me a prognostication for the Packers' record this season?
I think they go 13-3 or 14-2.
Wow.
Yeah, this is all presuming Rodgers is healthy. If Rodgers isn't healthy, then my prediction is
Yeah,
completely
yeah.
meaningless. That's a hedge. But so I think 13-3 or 14-2, and I think that they make the Super Bowl, but I'm not willing to say that they win it yet.
Yeah, fair enough, fair enough. Very good. Anything we can look forward to at the big lead coming up?
In a little bit, I'm going to have a piece on the Washington Post sports section, which It was headed by a guy named George Solomon for about 30 years, and the amount of alumni that came out of there is ridiculous. It was like Mike Wilbon, Tony Kornheiser, David Aldridge, Rachel Nichols, Christine Brennan, Sally Jenkins, J.A. Adonde. It was just insane group of talent that they had. Norman Chad. Like, it was... We will never see another sort of print sports section, either online or in like hard print, that's anything like that ever again. And I'm going to be covering that to a pretty thorough extent, and I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah, many.
And I don't know when it's going to come out. Probably many, 2 or 3 weeks.
Many graduating to ESPN.
Yeah. It was. It's basically it was a pipeline to ESPN, and it still is.
Yeah.
It's remained that way.
Very cool. Ryan, thanks so much for joining us, and let's do this again sometime.
Definitely. Thank you for having me. I love your work. Have a great rest of the week.
All right, you too. See ya. Ryan Glasspiegel of USA Today's The Big Lead joining us on the show this morning. Thanks to him for joining us. Thanks to you, the listener, for joining us as well as we continue on here.
Packers news of the day.
All right, Titletown District, my 2 cents on the matter here. Basically, if you haven't heard, and I don't know if you're listening to the show, you have to have heard this by now. What's all included here? So, you know, it's an evolving thing. This is you know, the Titletown District is already kind of, you know, they had their first phase when they added the big Cabela's store, and that went over so well that, you know, they're kind of continuing now. And the second phase, I guess you could say, is really going to be the huge part or the key part, but probably not the only one, as there will continue to be businesses brought in at some point. But they kind of listed the three big linchpins, or the three, you know, central key pieces to the puzzle here. And I really like that they felt it needed a Wisconsin feel to it. So they're bringing in a Kohler Hotel, owned by Herb Kohler, of course, who is rather remarkable how he goes from the spotlight at the PGA Championship now to the spotlight in Green Bay pretty seamlessly, and just staying in the news and all those kind of things. But, you know, he of course has the, you know, 5-star American club in Kohler, Wisconsin, and now Green Bay is going to get a high-end kind of boutique hotel. And, you know, a lot of people out there are going to criticize the price of the hotel, which is going to be astronomical, especially on game weekends. But I don't get the criticism of it, to tell you the truth, because I just think that more hotels in Green Bay on a game day is a good thing, because you if you've ever tried getting a hotel before, you know it's difficult. You know, people are on the phone and on the internet the moment the NFL schedule comes out. And if you're not doing it that exact moment, it's like impossible to get a hotel. And this just adds more rooms, and you don't have to book it. If it's too expensive for you, don't book it. It's only going to create more options elsewhere for cheaper, and maybe somewhere else. So I don't get the price criticism. If you don't like it, don't book it. But the other key pieces to the Titletown District here, there's going to be a Hinterland Brewery. They're moving their operations from downtown Green Bay, to the Titletown District. It's going to be something like 20,000 square feet. I really like Hinterland beer. Maybe it's not my favorite brewery, but I think they're really, really good. And I think it's another good addition to get, you know, a Wisconsin, even a Green Bay based, you know, business in there, and a Bell and Health Sports Medicine Clinic. Maybe doesn't really fit the entertainment kind of, aspect to, you know, everything else that's being added here, but I think it does fit the sports, you know, feel, I suppose you could say. The centerpiece of the whole project is a public plaza nearly 10 acres big, which is, you know, really more than I was expecting for the, you know, kind of a park-like type of atmosphere that they're going to be adding. And I think that's going to be cool. It kind of looks like almost it's going to be shaped like a football field, but they're going to have other stuff in there, kind of, you know, public art and I'm sure, you know, maybe swing sets for the kids, that kind of thing. It's going to have a skating rink in the winter, which I think that's really cool for a team that kind of has the frozen tundra mystique to it. It's only appropriate that they're going to have a skating rink as well. So I think that kind of captures, once again, kind of that Wisconsin winter feel to it, that you can't escape in Wisconsin. So, and more than anything, this goes to ensure the long-term viability of the Packers in Green Bay. The reality is they play in the smallest market, not just in the NFL, but pretty much all of professional sports in America. And they have to do things like this to compete and to keep themselves in Green Bay, because it wasn't so long ago, had the public vote for the Packers never gone through, you know, for the renovations to Lambeau Field that were completed in 2003, had that vote never gone through, I don't know if the Packers would be in Green Bay or in Wisconsin anymore. But it did, and you know, the Packers really learned a lesson, being like, everything we do has now got to be, you know, ensuring the long-term viability of the franchise in Green Bay, and this helps to accomplish that. The more local revenue that you know, just kind of piggybacks on top of everything they've done inside the Lambeau Field atrium. The expansion of the pro shop, the new Hall of Fame opening today, the new restaurant inside Lambeau Field, just bringing in more and more visitors on a year-round basis. That's what they say. It's a year-round destination now, and I think that only continues with this project here. So I like it. Is it going to have a little bit of a corporate feel to it? A little bit, but I think it adds value, and people are going to check things out. I think there's going to be even more, you know, like smaller pieces added. You know, there's going to be shopping options. I know somebody suggested to me on Twitter the other day, saying like an Apple store, something like that. And that makes sense to me, you know, saying that they might add that kind of has that big town feel to it that you're not going to necessarily find in a town the size of Green Bay, but I think that could be an option, and other things like that are going to come down the road. So there you go. There's the Titletown district. If you want to talk some football here and what's going on the field, I think the big story coming out the last 24 hours or so, Packers left tackle David Bakhtiari says he's not concerned by the knee injury lingering into the regular season. He, of course, has missed practice this week, and he finally talked about it with the media yesterday. And if you read his interview published by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, it was rather awkward, like David Bakhtiari refusing to say whether he suffered the injury before the game or during the game this past week at New England. I'm not sure really why you would refuse to talk about that, or why that's such a big deal. Just kind of, you know, doesn't want to talk about the injury whatsoever. I don't get it. If it's in the past, it's in the past. And sometimes I understand that guys want to hide injuries because they don't want players targeting them, but it's already out that it's a knee injury. People know, you know, what it is. So why not talk about it? I don't know. The good news is if David Bakhtiari really needs it, he's got 3 weeks to rest. You know, I mean, if it's so bad that they're concerned about it, you know, lasting into the regular season, well, he doesn't have to play in the preseason. The Packers can sit him for the next 3 weeks if it has to be. And yeah, I mean, you're a little bit concerned about Don Barclay playing left tackle for the Packers in the preseason, especially when he's protecting Aaron Rodgers' blind side. And that's going to be one of the key things I'm going to be watching during the game this upcoming Sunday. I think that's, you know, I'll be publishing my game preview of Sunday morning, and that'll definitely be one of the key things in it, is How does he perform and how does he protect Aaron Rodgers? And Ryan Glassbeagle mentioned it earlier. Rodgers took a sack in the first game and you kind of cringe a little bit, and you know, from the fact that, you know, it happened during a preseason game and he didn't maybe have to be in there in the game at all. But, you know, we'll see how it plays out. But, you know, I guess I'm not worried too much about David Bakhtiari, because I think if it was major, if it was a torn ACL, well, they would have taken care of it by now. Who knows? Maybe it's a torn MCL or something. Those kind of things, you need a few weeks off, but you can play with a torn MCL. Brian Bulaga did last season. He basically missed one game and came back and played really well after that. So if David Bakhtiari needs it, you know, hey, I don't care if he plays it all the rest of the preseason as long as he's there on opening day against the Chicago Bears. Talk about the next segment here.
The day ahead.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers, today on Friday, it is the grand reopening of the Packers Hall of Fame. Actually, it's kind of as we speak here, let's see. They had a ribbon-cutting ceremony at 8:30 a.m. Central Time, and the Packers Hall of Fame just opened at 9 o'clock a.m., open to the public, the paying public. It has been closed or moved for now more than a year as part of the renovations that have been taking place inside the Lambeau Field atrium, where they moved the pro shop, they moved the restaurant, 1919 Kitchen and Tap. They've moved the Hall of Fame. Also, these things are more accessible and more visible from the ground floor and the street level and things like that, which makes sense. And finally, the Hall of Fame is back open. It's been about a year and a half or so. And they actually moved many of the exhibits to the Neville Public Museum in Green Bay just so people could see it if they wanted to. So, but you know, as far as it being located inside Lambeau Field, been over a year since it's been open. And so a lot of changes taking place, you know, not just from the location, but they've added new technology, a lot more interactive features. You've probably heard it includes a recreation of Vince Lombardi's office that apparently is pretty cool. So opening today, as of today, on a day that the little else is going on, the Packers don't practice today. Kind of typical their regular season schedule. If they play on a Sunday, they practice Wednesday, they practice Thursday, they don't practice Friday. That doesn't mean they don't do anything. They still have meetings. I think the players still work out, strength and conditioning, that kind of thing, but they don't really practice per se. And then they hold the practice the day before the game now on Saturdays. So this is kind of the story of the day, is the Packers Hall of Fame open back up. You know, the Packers Hall of Fame has always been so cool. Even back in the day, even when it wasn't located inside Lambeau Field, I thought as a kid, it was cool to see, back when it was located kind of right next to the old Brown County Arena, across the street from Lambeau Field. So I suggest taking it out, checking it out sometime if you're in the area in Green Bay. But that'll do it for today's show, folks. Thank you everybody so much for joining us, on the show today. Thanks to Ryan Glassbeagle of USA Today's The Big Lead for joining the show. Glad to have him talking a little bit of football this morning. We're on the air every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 8:30 a.m. Central Time, the live edition of the show. Not really over the air, but anyway. We'll see you again on Monday. We'll break down this Packers-Steelers game, who looked good, who looked bad, those kind of things. We'll see you later, folks. As my call to action, as usual, if you've not done so already, please give us a rating on iTunes. It's the one small thing we ask. No subscription, no paywall here. The show is absolutely free. Do us a favor. It helps get word out about the show and helps get more people listening. So we'll see you later, folks. I leave you today with a song called Eudemon by Steam Kimmock Band on Psy Fidelity Records. Go Pack, go. Thank you.